Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. On Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and on Instagram, at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop all of your text and your voicemails. We're doing mailbag today, the last mailbag of the regular season. So we'll get to all of your voicemails, all of your text messages, but continue to drop those with the Derrick Rose documentary coming out tomorrow with the Gar Foreman and John Paxson end of the season press conference. There's a lot to talk about over the next couple of weeks, so make sure you drop those voicemails and those text messages for us. Matt, welcome back. Last day of the season, at least for the Bulls. A lot of teams are done completely now, but we've made it. We've made it to the last game of the season. It feels like we've been dragged here, especially the last couple of weeks. But let's ignore the Bulls for a second, because there was some wild things going on in the NBA last night. I want you to give me your instant reaction to what happened to Magic Johnson.
It was so weird. Obviously everybody's focus and attention was on Wade's final home game and Dirk's final home game. Knowing that Wade is on his way out, and most people assuming that Dirk is on his way out, and he did confirm that when he took the mic at center court of that Mavs game last night. And then in the middle of all of that drama, Magic Johnson, all of a sudden, there's just, I believe, like the first alert I got was Shams. I think Shams is the one who broke it, saying Magic Johnson is stepping down as president of basketball operations of the Lakers. And it was like, what? And then all of a sudden, it was this flurry of tweets from people who were there on the scene where Magic essentially just had an impromptu press conference, met with the media, said he's stepping down, and then went on to say all kinds of different crazy things. Like, by the way, I haven't told Jeannie Buss yet. I didn't have the heart to tell her before I told you guys, because she probably would have talked me out of it. And I am a caged bird and I need to be free and all this weird stuff. And I was like, and he looked and sounded so happy to have this giant weight off his shoulders. And I mean, I get why he did it, because clearly just being a beloved Laker legend who also gets to bounce around and do what he wants as an icon and an ambassador for the NBA is probably a lot more fun than trying to run the Lakers and bring them back to relevance. Because the latter of those two things sounds like a really hard job, and it sounds like after 9 months, Magic was like, I don't want to do this job anymore.
Yeah, he's not the type of guy either that likes criticism when things get tough either. You know, you think about all the jobs, and I know there's Lakers fans and everybody bringing up all the other jobs that he kind of backed out of or quickly escaped from when there was criticism or it was a job that he wasn't very good at. You know, you think about head coaching position, broadcasting positions, a plethora of other things that he's done. I mean, that kind of makes sense, too. He talked about how he wants to be more of a veteran mentor to the league and more of an ambassador than anything else. That's great, but I don't think he really realized some of the criticism he would have gotten had this thing fallen apart, and it did this season, and I think he's seeing all of that backlash now. And it only gets elevated, too, when you bring in somebody with the caliber of LeBron James. The standards are set at an all-time high there, so and some of the other moves, too, he made were questionable at best. But that's what I was saying when we were talking about LeBron and the Lakers and who's to blame for this entire season. I felt like Magic Johnson had a lot to do with the way that this team was kind of destroyed this season. So it was very weird, though. I find it very weird that he just impromptu press conference. Nobody had any questions ready for Magic Johnson. So was this his way of just kind of escaping all of that, all of the questions and things surrounding the criticism and the disappointment of this Lakers season? Because to me, that's what it seemed like here. It's like, all right, I'm out. I don't have to answer any questions. It's up to you guys now. See you later.
He essentially said exactly that. Like, people asking him about some stuff for next season and him thinking to himself, I'm not going to be here, and saying it.
I've been talking to people walking here. We've been talking about next year, and I'm sitting there saying, I'm not going to be here.
in an almost so giddy awkward manner. Like, it was definitely awkward. And it's like, as far as who gets the blame, like, I know Woj was going in hard on the Lakers' entire organization and Magic personally with his, Twitter and analysis of what went down last night. Some people being more sympathetic to what Magic is going through. And, you know, as far as what the Lakers did this year and falling short, yeah, maybe they would have made the playoffs if LeBron didn't get hurt, if Lonzo didn't get hurt, you never know. But the roster they assembled, some people want to point that finger of blame at LeBron because everybody assumes LeBron's actually the one making the decisions and LeBron told them who to sign. But the weird hodgepodge of players they brought in last offseason, you know, they bringing in Rondo, bringing in JaVale McGee, bringing in Michael Beasley, bringing in Lance Stephenson, and you're like, what? This is like an NBA clown car. Like, what is this roster? And, oh, lo and behold, it didn't work. And simultaneously seeing Julius Randle flourish in a new location, seeing D'Angelo Russell flourish in a new location. And then I think that, like, maybe the straw that broke Michael or Magic's back was all the Anthony Davis stuff, where they thought, all right, well, we're going to make this happen. And we didn't make this happen. And now, that was the other interesting thing to me, is a lot of people saying on Twitter last night, maybe Magic knows, based on the groundwork that he's already done, that the Lakers aren't getting any of the big-name free agents this summer. They're not getting Kawhi. They're not getting Jimmy. They're not getting Klay Thompson. They're not getting Kevin Durant. They're not getting Kyrie. They're not getting Kemba. And Magic said, well, I don't want to deal with that. I don't want to deal with the backlash that comes from our fan base when we don't get any of the big name free agents that we go after to come play with LeBron. And some of that is Magic being a bit of a coward, maybe, if that's true. And some of that falls on LeBron, because as good as he is, and as much as he has been the face of this league and the best player in this league going on 15 years, he's slowing down. And he also, wherever he's been, has proven to be a tough person to play with. And maybe all these big free agents in the summer of 2019 have no interest in playing with LeBron. And Magic knows that, and Magic wants out.
Yeah, and I think it's hard for him to face criticism. I think that's too. He doesn't want anything negative put on his brand, you know? And I understand it. I get it. The job isn't for everybody, right? And that's kind of what you were saying with Woj in his tweets. You know, he was talking about, you know, not being around the team all the time, traveling a bunch. Just kind of felt disconnected. And you can't do that when you've got LeBron James in your team and you're trying to build a championship and you've got a window of 4 years to do that. Like, you really got to dig in and be ready to take criticism when there's going to be it, and soak in the limelight when things do go your way, like he did last summer when he was happy that LeBron signed with the Lakers and saying he's going to get another star while he's sitting on the set of a baseball show in front of the Dodgers game. Like, to me, it was just the whole thing. The whole situation is wild and weird. I would just leave it at weird. And Rob Pelinka, I don't know if he's going to survive. Luke Walton, I don't know if he's going to survive either. But I just think I'm happy that this is for once now not the Bulls' problem. Like, we're not the only team with front office issues and a little bit of turmoil inside the organization. So it's good to not be that team in the center of the focus. But what did you think quickly about Wade's final performance? Same thing with Dirk Nowitzki, and also Jamal Crawford going off for just a random 51 in that Dallas game. It was like a throwback night to my childhood.
It was pretty crazy. That's now four different teams that Jamal Crawford has dropped a 50-piece playing for, which is just crazy. Four different teams he's dropped 50. And as much as Magic upstaged Dirk and Wade's big nights, Crawford also upstages a little bit himself, which is just classic. It was such an amazing night in the NBA last night. I'm still processing all of it. Wade's homecoming, you know, he dropped 30. You know, the Heat get a big win, but unfortunately, because of other action around the Eastern Conference, they get the boot from the playoffs. So kind of a disappointing end for him. As a Wade hater, I love the fact that he jumped up on the scorer's table one more time and fell pretty dramatically while doing it.
You're
to me,
ridiculous.
That was like the delicious cherry on top of my sentiment of get Dwayne Wade the hell out of my life. And Dirk, man, okay, look, yeah, I'm a little tongue in cheek about my Wade hate, and a lot of it still has to do with what a terrible signing he was here in Chicago, and that's not all his fault. He shares the blame there with our front office, but just getting a sense of how much people in the league appreciate and respect Dwayne Wade compared to how much people in the league past and present respect and appreciate Dirk. Look at the people who showed up for Dirk Nowitzki's last home game. Look at the people who spoke on Dirk's behalf and in appreciation of Dirk Nowitzki in his last home game, because our very own legend Scottie Pippen was there. Charles Barkley was there. Larry Bird was there. Detlef Schrempf and Sean Kemp were there. Like, it was a who's who of NBA Hall of Fame players who all showed up, not to Wade's last home game, but to Dirk's. And to me, as much as people argue about, you know, is Dwayne Wade like a top three, top four, you know, shooting guard in NBA history, certainly a first ballot Hall of Famer, three-time champion, whatever, whatever, Dirk Nowitzki meant more, means more to the NBA and its growth on a global scale than Dwayne Wade ever could, will, or would.
I think they both had impressive nights. I don't know if I would go that far and say, oh, like, Dwayne Wade, man, he was, I know the last couple years of this career, especially this tour and the stint with the Bulls was bad, but to me, like, he was one of the greatest players of at least my generation growing up. I think they were both impactful in their in different ways. I think the one thing with Dirk is he's always stuck with the Mavs. You know, if Dwayne Wade hadn't left the Heat, I wonder how differently some of us would feel, especially like here in Chicago, people that had sour tastes about his time here with the Bulls for 1 year. And look, I hated that year. I thought it was a waste of money. But at the end of the day, you're right. Like, watching Dirk last night get his mentions from Larry Bird and Charles Barkley's telling old stories about how he first met Dirk, it was really cool. But I also thought, too, the Wade thing, like, the entire stadium stayed after the game to listen to Dwayne Wade. I thought was really cool. Same thing in Dallas.
Well, it's rare because, you know, as my buddy Sabine mentioned on Outsiders last night, usually Heat fans check out somewhere around the middle of the third quarter.
Yeah, or they're too busy flipping off Joakim Noah. But
terrible fan base.
No, it was good, though. And I felt like, I don't know if you got a chance to check out the Budweiser commercial, too, with Dwayne Wade. It was about 4 or 5 minutes. Anybody who didn't check that out, you should. Even if you've got the most hate in your heart for Dwayne Wade and just dislike him as a player.
Yeah, it was hard to hate on that. Couldn't do it. It was pretty cool. To me, it's still weird that it's a beer commercial. It's like,
I know, I don't anything.
It's like, Dwayne Wade, legend, you know, compassionate human being, philanthropist, drink beer. It's like, what? Wait, what now?
When's the last time Dwayne Wade actually drank a Budweiser?
I don't know. I'm guessing a while.
Probably never in his career.
Dude only drinks like $200 bottles of wine.
But nonetheless, a great, really great night in the NBA, kind of recapping everything. And tonight, the final night for the Bulls. I want to do our honorable mentions from yesterday. And I also want to talk a little bit about Chris Dunn on this episode. He had some very, very interesting quotes. And man, did we say that he was going to have a spicy exit interview when it came time for that? And that time is now. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But let's go to our honorable mentions. If you didn't listen to our episode yesterday, we did our best and worst moments of the season. So Matt and I both picked 5 different moments that we liked. But obviously, there's dozens of moments in this season that you could pick out for best and worst. So we wanted to make sure we hit on some of those that we left off of our list. So you should go back and listen to that episode if you didn't listen to it already. Matt, a couple of them that I'm running down really quick on honorable mentions for the best. The first one, if we're talking about a specific moment, how about Wendell Carter Jr.'s block on Giannis in November?
Ooh, yeah.
Even though that was called a foul, that was still like one of those flashes of great, great. Like, we knew greatness was there when you're blocking the potential MVP of the league. So I felt like that was one of the great moments of the season that we left off.
Yeah, that was a great one. We knew that one of the best things about Wendell as they drafted him last summer was going to be his defense around, you know, the restricted area and his shot blocking ability, his rim protection. And that was probably the greatest proof of that. Just talking about the level of competition and the guy that he stuffed, because it's easier to get blocks on some opponents than it is on others. But to stuff Giannis is a pretty big deal. And, you know, in general, pretty impressed with the shot blocking ability Wendell showed, even as a 19-year-old rookie. Here's another honorable mention for you. I mean, this season was so crazy that it seems like when you think back over everything that's happened, you always forget about something. How about Carmelo Anthony being a Bull for like 36 hours? How about that? Finally, after all the years and all the attempts to lure Carmelo Anthony to Chicago, the Bulls in a clerical trade bring in Carmelo Anthony to make some money. And by the way, they also got Michael Carter Williams in a similar deal.
I had that on the honorable mentions too, probably as worst moment of the season.
Well, because do you remember, Jordan? I broke that news to you when we were recording an episode of this show. And you flipped out. You were like, what is going on?
Yes.
Jordan, before we get out of here, woes just came across my alerts. This is 9:50 a.m. Monday morning.
Uh-oh.
Adrian Wojnarowski. Houston has traded guard Michael Carter Williams and cash to Chicago, league sources tell ESPN.
Oh, are you serious?
I am dead serious.
You gotta be.
Michael Carter Williams.
You gotta be.
The Chicago Bull.
Are you serious?
I am dead serious, man. I'm staring at a Woj tweet right now from 9:49 a.m., 7 January 2019. Blue check mark Woj. Houston has traded Michael Carter Williams and cash to Chicago.
What is the point of this? There's got to be a move here, right?
There's got to be some other move here. This might be a move for another move that the Bulls are working on.
He better not play a single game in a Bulls uniform.
There's got to be another shoe here that we need to wait to drop. Here's another update. Chicago will send a future conditional second-round pick to complete the deal. Salary cap move for the Rockets, who would have had to guarantee Carter Williams a deal for the season by 5 p.m. today. So we just sent the Rockets.
Why are we trading second-round picks?
We just sent a second-round pick to the Rockets. I'm baffled, man. I'm honestly baffled by what's going on.
What are we doing?
Well, hey, it's a good thing we got 2 second rounders for Justin Holiday, right?
If he plays a single game, I swear, man. What a joke.
I don't know what's going on. I really don't know what's going on.
There better
this
be another
is
move.
Hilarious.
There better be another move, and it better be fast. Honestly, what a joke. What a joke.
Oh,
if
my God,
not
I love
move,
this so much. You know what, Jordan? This is what I needed to lift my spirits. I've just been so depressed for the last 24 hours after the conclusion of that Bears game. Oh, okay. Hold on. Nobody panic. Woj tweet. Chicago will waive Michael Carter Williams. Leak sources tell ESPN. Oh, my God.
Wow, that was a roller coaster of emotions. I am.
Oh, Bulls Twitter. Bulls Twitter is going to be so fun for the next few hours.
You know, that was right in the middle of the time where the Bulls were so bad and all the dysfunction had happened. And when you hear the name Michael Carter Williams join the Bulls again, and you're not really sure if that's just a cash deal and the way it was tweeted out. Oh, my God. I'm just thankful that he didn't play a single game in a Bulls uniform. I'm so glad that we'd rather see Ryan Arcidiacono, Shaq Harrison, and hell, Walter Lemon Jr. play in a Bulls uniform over Michael Carter Williams. But I had that friendly deals with the Rockets. That's what I named it, because it was the Melo deal. It was Michael Carter Williams for cash. Both of those deals were for cash. And then the TLC deal with Oklahoma City for some more cash and a look at a player that's not going to be with this Bulls team next year. So a couple other best moments that I had was Zach LaVine's career high in 47 points versus Atlanta in the 4 overtime win. I felt like that was pretty good.
Ugh.
I know the results.
I put that game on my honorable mentions of worst moments of the season because, dear God, why 4 overtimes between those two teams?
Yeah, that was ridiculous. That game, though, was just you know, it was almost 4 hours of Bulls basketball that was just never ending.
I mean, if it were between two better teams, it would have been great. But it was like, all right, let's see who can be more incompetent than the other team. It was a battle in incompetence.
A couple other ones I said were signing Shaq Harrison and Ryan Arcidiacono. Like, if you think back to the beginning of the season, Ryan Arcidiacono was on a partially guaranteed contract. And he ended up earning that contract throughout the season. So felt like that was a really good pickup. And also, too, picking up Shaq Harrison after he was waived by the Suns. That was a huge move that we kind of left off as a best moment. But as far as good deals this season, talk about Ryan Arcidiacono and Shaq Harrison as one of those fringe moves. Like we talked last year with like David Nwaba. Both of those moves I thought were really good and should be at least mentioned in best moments of the season.
Absolutely.
Couple others that I had that did not make the best moments, that made the worst moments, Matt. And I don't even know if this is a worst moment. This is more of just a funny moment than anything. But how about opening night when the Bulls are getting off the bus at the 76ers game and there's a Philly homeless man yelling at Cristiano Felicia that he's not Michael Jordan? Like, that set the tone for the entire season.
You ain't no Michael Jordan.
Dude, homeless, shirtless Philly guy. It's just like he's had a soft spot in my heart all season long, because he just, with no shame whatsoever, got in Felicio's face and told him what every Bulls fan is thinking, in a very dumbed down, obvious way. To simply say that Felicio is not, in fact, Michael Jordan is fairly obvious, but not only is Felicio not Michael Jordan, he's not an NBA player. And the fact that that happened on the first night of the season is just so brilliant and perfect. And we saw so many moments this season when Felicio did get into the rotation where all we could do was just shake our heads and or laugh and say, what did I just watch when it came to Felicio? And I feel like it was bookended brilliantly with his little episode in their game the other night when he didn't know that he needed to be on the floor for the final defensive possession of the game.
He's provided us with two legendary moments this season as far as funny moments. The soundbite will live on for a long time. I can guarantee you that right now on this show.
You ain't no Michael Jordan.
Cristiano Felicio put it off. You can see in the video, too. He's like smiling. He's like, what the hell is wrong with that dude? Like, does he have any idea what era he's in from the NBA? And then also too, the turnaround look that we got from Felicio, that he looked disgusted after Antonio Blakeney's dunk, and then we got Markkanen holding his head too. So those are two great moments, funny moments. While we talked about the Celtics loss, I think we forgot too that Jim Boylan saying that your play is embarrassing after that press conference after the Celtics game.
I love how that's in our intro for every episode.
Oh, that's just, it's a reminder of where we started with Jim Boylan's tenure and kind of where we're ending now, and everything in between, too. On top of that, I had any Jim Boylan press conference this season. This isn't bad, or this isn't good or bad, or could be on both lists. Any press conference, media session, or radio interview he did, he just provided great sound bites all season. So, and just, I mean, provided us with entertainment, right?
Absolutely. And speaking of, another honorable mention in the ways of entertainment, how about all season long Arcidiacono doing his impersonations and replays of Rolo buckets? You know, like when Archie's on the bench and Rolo has a move in the post, on their way back down the court, Archie gets out of his seat on the bench and essentially just mimics the bucket that Robin just did. And it's something so silly, but I love it so much. It was a very necessary mode of entertainment when a lot of these games were hard to watch.
That's a good one. And I had two, there's a few more. I had Wade and Benny the Bull jersey swap as one of the worst moments of the season. I don't know why either one of us didn't put that on there, but I don't think that got enough attention. Like,
yeah,
he was the Bulls were the only team that he didn't jersey swap with a player. The only team, and they did it with mascot.
Yeah.
So that had to be one of the worst moments.
Just embarrassing. I mean, but whatever. I'm glad none of those players swapped jerseys with that piece of you-know-what. How about another bright one? Markkanen's reaction to that Blakeney dunk from a couple weeks ago? You remember that?
Yes. Yes. That's crazy.
And in the same game, the reaction that Felicio had on the bench, where he was like cradling himself in his seat on the bench.
Yeah, this just provided us with great social media entertainment. So there's been some good moments, like some really funny good moments from this Bulls team this season. It's dysfunctional and up and down and big of a roller coaster this season has been. We still provided with some pretty funny moments. Here's another one, too, that I think we continue to forget. When we were talking about that Sixers win on ESPN, we forgot about the last play where they had to like rerun that last play like three times. And remember, Otto Porter Jr. was in the locker room
taking
a drug test, so he wasn't on the floor?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
That was just ridiculous. I had the 10-game losing streak in January with a fully healthy roster, too. It was probably part of the worst part of this season. And then, two, Chandler Hutchison playing 41 minutes against the Clippers 2 days after having a hairline fracture in his foot, and then he misses the rest of the season.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's definitely a low point. Why did he do that? Why?
I think that kind of wraps up the honorable mentions, though. If anybody else has any other moments from this season, best or worst, you can drop a text message, voicemail form. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. Continue to drop those in the next couple of weeks. We'll continue to talk about all the moments, anything that we forgot to talk about, anything that didn't make Matt or I's list. So, hit us up on 331-979-1369. Matt, before we transition to Chris Dunn, want to let our listeners know, fill out that survey for us. The survey link, 10 questions about the Bulls season as a whole, how you're feeling about it. Awards specifically for this Bulls team, MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, your satisfaction level with Boylan, and a handful of other questions. So it'll take you less than 5 minutes to fill out. The link, if you're not on social media, if you're not on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, the link is in the episode description. So all you have to do is hit episode description and the link will be at the bottom. So click on that, fill it out for us, and we're going to be doing an episode next week just kind of relaying all that information and talking about each one of those questions. So please fill that out, share it with all your friends, your family that are Bulls fans. We would really, really appreciate that.
What's up, Locked On Bulls Nation? Matt here with a message from Wyze. Wyze is the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allows you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. It has 1080p full HD picture quality, images so clear you won't miss a single thing. Also, a night vision feature and two-way audio. Wyze's mission is to bring amazing smart home products accessible to everyone. You can check on your home anytime with Wyze's app's live stream. Connect with life as it unfolds in sharp focus. And that includes live streaming with an 8x digital zoom. The possibilities and uses for Wyze Cam are endless. Yes, it can serve as a great nanny cam for all of you parents out there. But what about bachelors like me? Sitting in the living room watching the game, you got dinner cooking on the stove, and you don't want to go back and forth between the living room and the kitchen 10 times during the game just to check on dinner. Put a Wyze Cam on your coffee table, bam. You can keep an eye on whatever's simmering on that stove of yours without having to bother to get up and go to and from the kitchen while the game is on. That's my kind of product right there, improving my quality of life as a sports fan. And for just $10 more, Wyze Cam Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds. And here's the best part. Not only does it work with your mobile phone from anywhere, it also is compatible with Alexa. For all of you in-home smart speaker users out there, like me, Wyze Cam compatible with Alexa. Boom. This product is amazing. Go to Wyze.com. That's Wyze.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price on your Wyze Cam today. That's Wyze.com, Wyze/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price. Life moves fast. Your in-home camera should too.
Before we get to our mailbag questions, let's talk about Chris Dunn. You know, we said things were going to get spicy, and things are getting a little spicy now. What did you think about his quotes from the plethora of beat reporters? And this probably the last opportunity Chris Dunn's going to be able to talk before the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I wasn't moved. I wasn't very moved one way or the other by Dunn's comments. I kind of expected him to say this kind of stuff. It's a business. They're going to do what they're going to do. I'm just going to control what I can control. I mean, just like real, you know, by the book, verbatim kind of responses that you hear from players when they're asked about their futures with their team. Because, you know, it's no secret that the Bulls are interested in adding some point guard depth this offseason, whether it be in the draft or free agency. So, you know, he did say he hasn't talked to management recently, but obviously they'll have their exit interview and maybe he'll get a better sense of what the plan is for him now. But I think, you know, we heard Paxson say in like, you know, the latter stages of this season interview that they're still evaluating Chris Dunn. But based on what we've seen, certainly based on what we saw when Dunn and Archie were both healthy and how those minutes were distributed, especially with the other starters, it looks like they are very much cooling on Chris Dunn and that they do not see him as this team's starting point guard of the future. So knowing that context, I mean, sure, Chris Dunn should stand up for himself and kind of defend the season that he had as best he could. I thought, you know, it was a little interesting to talk about, to hear him talk about how maybe things shifted throughout the season as far as the role he was asked to play, whether to be an aggressive point guard to look for, you know, opportunities for himself or to be more of a distributor, and naming Markkanen in that kind of conversation. And then saying, I always had that ball in my hands. If I knew we were going to be a multi-ball handler situation, I would have prepped for the summer a little differently. But going into the summer, my job was to create for others. You know, so I don't know. I didn't love that comment because I was like, dude, do what is asked of you. And as a point guard, you should be able to distribute and create opportunities for yourself. If you're an NBA point guard, you should be able to do both. Certainly, if you want to be a starting NBA point guard, maybe there's a little bit of frustration with your coach, or in this case, coaches, asking you to do different things, but you got to roll with the punches. So, like, in the grand scheme, I was not particularly moved either direction by Dunn's comments. He's just a guy trying to fight for his job. So, whatever.
I find it a bit bizarre that he said he hasn't talked to management, you know, recently. You know, especially over the last month, even go back to the last 2 months, you know, when they decided to start doing a couple different things with Chris Dunn, and when even at the trade deadline, when they were asked about him, you know, and they said, we still think highly of Chris Dunn. We're still evaluating his game. All of those types of things you would think in behind the scenes that they would at least have a conversation, or that Gar Foreman or John Paxson or Michael Reinsdorf or anybody on the coaching staff would have multiple conversations with Chris Dunn about what he needs to do in the next 2 months to finish out the season, what they want to see from him. Like, I get it. The inconsistency from Chris Dunn's seasons of the last 2 years have been bad. The injuries derailed him last year. This year to start the season, they derailed him. A bunch of different factors that go into this. But to me, your play speaks the loudest. And, you know, multi-ball handler system, that's something that everybody else had to adjust to on this team. And I get it, you're a point guard, you've been a point guard your entire life, but everybody kind of had to adjust to their new roles. And Robin Lopez playing more minutes than he thought he was going to and being a focal point for a month of the offense. And then Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine had to make adjustments too. So I think it's an adapt or die type situation here for him. And look, I get it. Nobody knew Jim Boylan was going to be head coach. So I can understand it from that standpoint, too. Maybe Fred Hoiberg had different plans for what they wanted him to do this season. And once Jim Boylan took over in the start of December, it changed the entire scheme and it changed the entire plans and the entire route of what they wanted to do with Chris Dunn. And look, dude, you gotta be able to knock down buckets and you got to be able to pass the ball and you got to be able to be consistent. And I just don't think we saw all of that this season.
Well, and I mean, I think the bottom line... And Chris Dunn said, you know, I had some good games and some bad games, and I kind of had to figure out based on what, you know, Fred and then Jim wanted me to do. and finding looks for other people or finding looks for myself. You know, it varied throughout the season, which was kind of challenging. But bottom line is this. When Chris Dunn played well, or when LaVine and or Markkanen played well, which Bulls team looked better and like a team that actually is headed towards something that could be considered realistic competition at the NBA level? Because to me, that answer is clear. The Bulls look like a better basketball team with a brighter future when LaVine and or Markkanen had good games, not the ones where LaVine and or Markkanen sat for whatever reason and Chris Dunn had a bigger game.
You're spot on about that. The only game that I can think of that all three of those guys had really good games was the game against Indiana right at the beginning of 2019, right? Where Chris Dunn, I think, had
the Pacers game where Dunn had like 17 assists
or whatever, right? Yeah, he had his career high in assists. Dunn, Markkanen, and LaVine all contributed scoring-wise, and that's the best, I think, the quote-unquote core, has looked since the rebuild started. If we're talking about one specific game, that was it. Outside of that, you're right. Like, I feel like he's kind of got boxed out, and maybe that's because of the addition of Otto Porter. It's raised Otto Porter's usage a little bit and reduced the role that Chris Dunn's had. So I think ultimately it comes back to one quote in particular. I think I thought this was interesting. Earlier this season, I was being aggressive and it kind of deferred away from Lauri Markkanen a little bit. Dunn said, so the next stretch, I kind of sacrificed my role to see how it went. You could say it was for better. You could say it was for worse. I really don't know the answer to that. Going forward, it allowed me to understand who I am as a player, and that's to be aggressive. He said, having the ball in my hands, that's just how I've played since I was yee-high. I always had the ball in my hands. If I knew we were going to do multi-ball handlers, I would have prepped for it last summer. But going into the summer, my job was to create for others. So I don't know. The excuses, I get it, and we've given him some slack for that. But outside of that, you got to adjust or die. And I think he's realizing that he's coming up on a contract too. So he's got to save some face here for the disappointing season I think he had this season. So what do you think that the exit interview is going to look like? And what do you think that conversation is going to be like? Because if they haven't talked in a month or 2 months, this is all going to get aired out in front of Jim Boyle and the coaching staff, the front office, and even if Michael Reinsdorf is sitting in all of these exit interviews. How do you think that's going to roll this in the next few days?
I mean, if I'm being honest, I don't think it matters how the exit interview airs out. Because if we know anything from recent history, a Bulls player's perception of how an exit meeting with management and the coaching staff goes does not necessarily indicate what happens next between the player and the organization.
That's a good point.
I mean, I'm just spitting facts there. Because whether it's Jimmy Butler or whether it's Dwayne Wade or whether it's Derrick Rose or, you know, any of these recent examples, it doesn't matter what the team says to that player at that exit interview. Or even as recently as giving Bobby Portis a different feeling about where he was and where he stood with the organization and their plans, and then being traded. Like, and this is not necessarily just to attack the front office. This is to just say, this is how this goes. Players come away from exit interviews feeling like, okay, I know what they asked me to work on, and I know, or at least I have a feeling of where I stand. And the front office tries to be as transparent as possible with their players while also knowing that this is a fluid business. And depending on what happens in the draft, depending on what opportunities present themselves in free agency, everything that's said in an exit interview can change. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Matt, let's dive into some of these mailbag questions in the final day of the regular season. I still can't believe we're at this point.
Oh, I can. I have felt all 81 of these games so far.
Hey, what up, guys? This is Danny calling from Anaheim, California. Big fan of the show. Always listen to it at work. My question is, if we land out of the top three in the draft, I think there's only four guys that we should be really looking at. There's Coby White, Darius Garland, Jarrett Culver, and DeAndre Hunter. Who do you think would be the best fit for us? I think Coby White, he's a point guard, obviously. Kind of reminds me of Mike Conley. He's 6'5". Darius Garland, I would be a little bit hesitant just because he had a meniscus tear. And, I mean, I don't know about picking up somebody with an injury or past injury like that. Jared Culver, I think he just got exposed in the Final Four. And then, I think he got exposed with, like, tough defensive-minded players. And DeAndre Hunter, I think he didn't crack under the pressure. I think he's a pretty good player, but I don't know. Who do you guys think would be a good fit? I think out of all those four guys, I would pick Kobe White. I see some pretty good potential in him, but what do you guys think?
Thanks for the call, Danny. So, let's kind of rank these four prospects that he's talking about. DeAndre Hunter from Virginia, Kobe White from North Carolina, Darius Garland from Vanderbilt, and Jarrett Culver from Texas Tech. If the Bulls fall out of the top three, and this is saying they can go anywhere from 4 to 8, rank them from best to worst case scenario in terms of who you would want to see the Bulls take if they don't get a top three pick. Where do you land on all four of these guys?
It's a really good question. I think some people moved DeAndre Hunter above Jarrett Culver after not just the championship game, but the Final Four games, because Culver really struggled in Texas Tech's final two games. And DeAndre Hunter was huge for Virginia. I still think, as far as NBA ceilings, I think I'm going to take Culver as a little bit higher than DeAndre Hunter. Although maybe you could say that Hunter has a bit more versatility at the NBA level. Although I do think, you know, as much as Culver is kind of like a shooting guard, he could also play some small forward in the NBA. I think you're seeing more and more small players at that wing spot. And Culver still has a good amount of length to be able to play that position at the NBA level. I would probably put Kobe White behind those two. Really showed us some nice things, because as much attention as Nasir Little was getting as far as early stage college player talk, early stage 2019 NBA draft talk, and being talked about as a potential top 10 pick, Kobe White, certainly leading up to the tournament and then in the tournament itself, had like completely leapfrogged Nasir Little and looks like maybe behind Ja, the consensus second best point guard in this draft class. He is kind of like a combo guard, but I think he certainly has potential to play point guard at the NBA level. If the Bulls had the fourth pick and Ja Morant is off the board, I feel like you might be reaching on Kobe White if you were to take him at four. And then I would put Garland fourth on that list.
Yeah, that's good. I think, to be honest with you, I think there's a good possibility that Jarrett Culver goes in the top three. You know, you could see RJ Barrett slide to four. So at this point, you know, even beyond just the Final Four and the national championship game where he didn't play all that well, I still don't think that necessarily hurts his draft prospects. I think anybody that plays well, it helps, but I don't think it necessarily hurts anybody if they have two bad performances. And I don't even really think it was that bad. Like, Jarrett Culver hit a massive shot in the Final Four to tie the game and a massive three mm-hmm. to send him to the national championship. So I think you're right, though. If we're at pick number four, DeAndre Hunter or Jarrett Culver, it's splitting hairs at this point for me. DeAndre Hunter, I think, can fit into what the Bulls are doing right away. Desperately need defense, and he's a wing that can come in and play defense right away at 6'7", 225. Jarrett Culver, like you said, I think can switch between the two and the three. Guy that I think can develop behind Otto Porter Jr. too. The only thing that I have a little bit of concern about is his three-point consistency. He was 30.4% in college this season. Last year, he shot 38.2%. To DeAndre Hunter's 43.8% from three. And while he didn't shoot all that many, about three per game, still, the 3-and-D seems to suit DeAndre Hunter more than it does Jarrett Culver, but I think Jarrett Culver's, if we're talking about ceilings, fit, maybe Jarrett Culver's a little bit better for this Bulls team, but to me, it's splitting hairs. And if we're talking about the point guard position, Kobe White and Darius Garland, I think they're both fantastic options if the Bulls end up falling. If they fall from 4 to 7, if they fall from 4 to 6, I think those are good options. And where you're drafting at, Coby White can be a really good player. We've talked about his, I've talked about his 3-point shooting, his ability to facilitate. I think that's the biggest thing about him is he was already shooting legit NBA 3-point shots in dozens this season. So that made me a little bit more comfortable with his game. And it's too bad we didn't get to see Darius Garland for that, the majority of the rest of this season, but barring that he comes back fully healthy from his injury, I think he can be really good too. He's going to be one of those underrated prospects that people kind of forget about because of the injury. And then next season when we see him fully healthy with an NBA team, people are going to be like, damn, how did we all forget about Darius Garland? I think I would give the edge to Coby White though, just because we've seen recently and, you know, just trying to stay away from players that are injured and hoping they can come back fully healthy. I think that's the biggest thing that scares me between those two.
Yeah, that's the other, you know, thing that for me puts Coby White ahead of Garland is the injury risk that you run with Garland. Yeah, I'm with you. If the Bulls do end up falling to, God forbid, somewhere 6 through 8, then I think maybe they could legitimize taking Coby White and it being less of a reach. But if they are, say, at 3 or 4 and it's Zion and Ja are off the board, then I think you have to consider taking one of those wings or one of those combo forwards because, you know, as much as this team really does need to address the point guard situation, I think they would be going against what they say they do, which is drafting the best available player.
In a wing-heavy draft, too, especially if you're going to be at the top, if you're going to be at the 3rd pick or the 4th pick or even the 5th pick, you got to go with best available at this point. I still think that they're accumulating assets.
And they could also take a flyer on a point guard with that 2nd round pick because there are probably going to be some point guards lingering around, including Carson Edwards, who just had a hell of a tourney for Purdue.
But thanks for the question, Danny. I think it was an interesting question to think about as far as where the Bulls might be positioned. And I think it's really going to all matter about where they end up. And if they fall, then maybe we see them take a chance on a point guard. And if they stay at 4, I think my bet at least is that they're going to take a wing there.
Hi, guys. Tim here calling in again. Somebody asked me a question, and I told him, like, the Bulls are 2 or 3 moves away from being a top 5 team in the Eastern Conference. And then I looked at the teams, and every team besides Milwaukee has a question mark. Toronto has the Kawhi Leonard thing going on. Philly, Ben Simmons can't shoot. Joel Embiid, we don't know if he's going to be healthy or not. Boston has the Kyrie problem. Indiana, Oladipo may not be the same player. And then after that, you have a drop-off. And we don't know if Kevin Durant's coming or not. But the Bulls, if they can get, let's say, a top pick, say Ja Morant, and then put a veteran point guard in front of him until he's ready, say maybe like a Ricky Rubio, somebody like that, and then add another veteran or so, I think the Bulls are a top 4 team in the Eastern Conference. And if Laurie takes the next step, I think we can cause some problems and maybe be in the Eastern Conference Finals next year. Let me know what you think, guys.
All right, appreciate the call, Matt. I don't have this confidence level in this Bulls team next season, but just looking at the Eastern Conference as a whole, and I know we talked a little bit about this at the beginning of the week, but you think with the Bulls' moves this summer, and if they stay healthy all next season, that they have a legit shot at being a top 5 team in the Eastern Conference? I get there's some question marks with the teams at the top, but man, that's, like you were saying a couple days ago, a massive jump from where they are right now to 16 wins. Adding that just to get back to 500 would be an accomplishment. So I don't know if they're going to take that big of a jump, and I wouldn't set my expectations that high for next season, just being realistic.
Yeah, I mean, a whole lot would have to go right for that to happen. I mean, you do realize that after losing to the Knicks last night, the Bulls secured their worst home record in franchise history. 53 seasons of Chicago Bulls basketball, and this year, 9-32 at home. The worst home record of Bulls history.
That's wild.
You're talking, and like Jim Boylan talked about that after the game last night, and saying that, you know, one of the goals heading into next season is to be a winning team at home and having to protect their home floor better. That's, I mean, even to talk about the Bulls fighting for a top 5 seed in the East, you're talking about improving your home win total by more than double. And let's just start there. And then also maybe add a few more wins on the road, which is no easy task. Assuming everyone stays healthy and they add a couple pieces, you know, a veteran, maybe a point guard, round out the bench a little bit. And then everyone, new and old, stays healthy for the most part for an entire season. You're still talking about a team that needs to perform beyond their expectations, wildly beyond their expectations, to all of a sudden go from being a basement dweller to a top five seed in the East. I think that's ludicrous.
I don't see it, you know, and it's not to say that we don't want to see the Bulls team improve or make those adjustments or take that leap, because we certainly do, but we can see what happens when injuries derail an entire season. That's what happened this year, and that's what caused, I think, a lot of the dysfunction is, you know, you had one layer and hoping that one layer stayed healthy in that starting unit, and almost every single one of those players in your starting five was hurt for a good chunk of the season. So, you know, to think that that can't happen next season, I think, is being a little bit naive. But take a look at the Eastern Conference. I get where he's coming from. If the Raptors don't re-sign Kawhi Leonard, then they're in some major trouble. If the 76ers don't retain Tobias Harris and or Jimmy Butler, they could be in a little bit of trouble too. And if Joel Embiid doesn't stay healthy, so granted, I'll give him that. The Celtics, I don't know what they're going to do, but I would assume that they would look better than they did. And they ended up with 49 wins. They were 49-33. If they lose Kyrie, I still think they're going to be a good team. Maybe not a top five team, but we don't know. But losing Kyrie would be huge for them. And the Pacers, too. We don't know what Victor Oladipo is going to look like when he comes back next year. And they've been playing really good without him. But still, they're going to lock up a lot of money with Bojan Bogdanovic this summer. And then you don't really know what you're going to get from Victor Oladipo once he comes back from that injury. So I can understand that. And then you go through 6 through 8. All of those teams. I think the Nets are on the rise. The Magic, I don't know if this is just a fluke season or not. And the Pistons are always hanging around at right around 500. Maybe they can make that leap. I'm not saying that it's absolutely impossible, but I think you're setting yourself up for disappointment if you put your expectations that high of a level, at least for next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's foolish to, when trying to figure out where the Bulls land in the hierarchy of the Eastern Conference next season, to assume that several of those teams that are currently top five teams in the East get worse.
Right.
You know, maybe one of those teams take a step back or lose one of their key players. But to assume that the Bulls can all of a sudden vault themselves into being a top five team in the East because bad things happen in the offseason to everyone who currently is a top team in the East, to me, is just foolish.
I think it certainly can be interesting as far as playoff talk if the Bulls do land Ja Morant or Zion Williamson. And that's what our caller had mentioned. He said Ja Morant specifically, but I even tossed in Zion Williamson for a second. You know, you add one of those to those pieces, then the Bulls, I think, are going to seriously consider some other moves this summer. And we don't really know what those are, but just continue to circle back that this is a very, very important offseason. And I continue to stress that, and I will all see summer long as far as the direction, how long this is actually going to take. But you're right. Like, it's hard to imagine all five teams at the top of the Eastern Conference are going to somehow get worse next season. Like you said, one or two teams maybe. But you also have to think of the teams that are on the rise, too. You know, the Nets could be certainly better if they sign somebody with a max contract. So there's a bunch of different factors to this. So I would just say temper your expectations, and maybe we can be a little bit more accelerated about that if the Bulls get the number one or the number two pick this summer. I think that's where I would start, though.
And that's not to say that the Bulls are going to be awful again next year.
Right.
I think if they stay healthy and round out their bench a little bit and maybe add a starting caliber point guard, they can make a leap next year. But you're talking about making a leap from 22 wins to maybe 35, and that would be a big, I mean, that's a 13-win improvement. That's a big leap to make in 1 year. And then that still, to me, is going to be short of even the eighth seed, because as much as people still talk about how the East is super weak and maybe the top of the East has gotten better, but the West is still obviously the better conference, which is true. But to vault yourself to the top four of the East is now talking about being a 50-win team, Mike, the top two teams in the East are you know, bordering on six being 60-win teams. So it's not like making an improvement from 22 wins to the mid-30s or even high-30s is suddenly going to make you a top-tier team in the East. No. The top-tier teams in the East are now teams that have more wins than the top-tier teams in the West. So you can realistically talk about the Bulls making a big leap next season and still falling short. That's totally reasonable, if not likely.
Agreed, and we still did. There's two wild cards in this, too. If the Knicks end up getting two top free agents this summer, that could change the whole outlook. And if the Atlanta Hawks end up signing a couple people and get better with their picks, too, and whatever moves that they're going to make this offseason, I think they can take a huge leap. So you're talking about another two other teams that could be in the mix for any one of these playoff spots next year.
Mm-hmm.
Health is the most important, and look, I think they're going to take a jump. I just don't know how big of a leap that's going to be next season and where they can stack up against some of these other Eastern Conference teams, especially at the bottom, that are rising up fairly quickly and had an entire season to play together, such as the Atlanta Hawks or the Orlando Magic or even the Brooklyn Nets, who, you know, we forget too, Caris LeVert had been out for almost the entire season. He was borderlining on an all-star level season to start, so they continue to add those pieces around him. That team's going to continue to be good. So, all right, Matt. So the final question of the day, and thanks for everybody who's dropped us text messages and voicemails. Whatever we don't get to on today's episode, we'll be sure to get to in the next couple of days. So continue to hit us up, 331-979-1369. I'm going to combine these two because it's asking similar questions. But from the 773 and the 630, the 630 asked, do our pre-draft rankings change for DeAndre Hunter or Jarrett Culver after watching the national championship game? And the 773 asks us, the Bulls will most likely draft Culver and sign Rondo to be the starting point guard for next year. Dunn, Valentine, Culver, Hutchison, Lopez is a damn fine second unit. So that was more of a statement than a question, but what do you think about either of those? Give me your thoughts really quick on Hunter and Jarrett Culver and where you have them on your draft board.
Yeah, so from our voicemail about the draft scenarios, I still think I'm a little higher on Culver's total upside, but I think DeAndre Hunter certainly has potential to also be a damn fine player in the NBA. And then as far as the 773 saying sign Rondo, draft Culver, Dunn, Valentine, Culver, Hutchison, Lopez, damn fine second unit. I'm sorry, I can't get past the sign Rondo part.
It's true.
I mean, what does this Bulls team show that they need in their starting lineup for the last couple of years that they haven't had? A point guard who can shoot threes.
7 of 11.
Oh, my goodness.
All of his field goals have been threes.
Wow.
You'd have told me Cameron Payne would made 7 threes in a game, I might have slapped you, Neil.
How does Rondo fix that? It didn't work the first time he came here. You want to bring him back? Come on, people.
You know, I think Rondo is a little bit interesting, though. I get it. Like, not being able to shoot threes is a huge cause for concern. And if they're drafting Jarrett Culver, then you might even have some more issues. The only thing I will say is, like, think back to the season that he had playing with just last year with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. And even think back two seasons from that prior to when he signed to the Bulls. And he led the league in assists per game at 11.7 with the Sacramento Kings. Just thinking about how he played with DeMarcus Cousins and maybe some of the things that he can do playing alongside Wendell Carter Jr. and Lauri Markkanen. Maybe that's an option, but I think Rondo, if we're talking about point guards that the Bulls have on their wish list, he's probably somewhere around 4, 5, 6 as far as veteran options that they can have. And look, you know, before they let him go and they decided to hit the complete rebuild button, remember the comments from John Paxson and Gar Foreman at the end of that season, and whether that they were being truthful about this or not, that's up to you guys to decide, but they said that they liked his leadership qualities and the way that he mentored the young players. So if Rondo was a guy that they signed, I would not be that surprised. Just those two factors combined. But like you said, the fact that he can't shoot three-pointers, you would have to find another guard that can do that.
And there's clearly some history between him and Jim Boylan.
True. The towel throwing.
They would need to smooth that over. Got to smooth that over.
Oh, man.
First.
It seems like every time we talk about a free agent to bring back, there's something that's got to be smoothed over. That second unit, not bad, though. I mean, if we're setting the bar at what the Bulls had this season, well, it's not bad. I mean, Dunn, Valentine, Culver, Hutchison, and Lopez, it's not bad compared to what we had this year.
It's a pretty small second unit, you know, playing Hutch at the four, or maybe, you know, an opportunity for Culver to play some super small ball minutes at the four. But, yeah, I mean, as you said, compared to the hodgepodge G League stew that we've seen coming off the bench of the Bulls this season, that would be an improvement. Not lying about that. And honestly, like that, you know, the other thing there is whether it's Hunter or Culver, if it's one of those guys, Dunn, Valentine, Hutch, and Rolo, then you're talking about only having one reliable three-point shooter in your second unit if you want to call Denzel Valentine a reliable three-point shooter. And that's assuming that the dude can, you know, be on a basketball court at some point next season. So, you know, there's certainly a hole there in your second
unit. That's
true. Because we, you know, we've seen Chandler Hutchison work on his shot, but there's still a lot of work to go. And you can't assume that Culver or Hunter could come in and be a reliable three-point shooter as a rookie coming off the bench.
So, yeah, thanks for the question. We appreciate it. Be very interesting over the next couple of days. Bulls news. Bulls' final game is tonight. Play the 76ers. Wrap up the season. It's kind of odd. We started with the 76ers, and we're ending with the 76ers on the road.
You ain't no Michael Jordan.
Coming full circle with this. Thursday, John Paxson, Gar Foreman will address the media. We will do that episode and break down all of that conversation on Friday's episode. So tomorrow we'll be doing just kind of a recap more of the season, take some more of your questions, and a few other things that we didn't get to on today's episode. So keep hitting us up at 331-979-1369. The Derrick Rose documentary also comes out on Stadium tomorrow night, too, if you're looking forward to watching that. We'll break that down on Monday's episode next week. Spend some time, give people an opportunity, too, who might not be able to catch it tomorrow night, to spend the weekend and maybe catch up and be able to watch that. So we'll have a full breakdown, and we don't want to play any spoilers or anything like that. So we'll give you guys till Monday to be able to watch that, and we'll break that down on Monday's episode. That's gonna about do it here on Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app, on the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Hit us up on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Our text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. Subscribe to the show, Himalaya, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you're hitting that subscribe button so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. Make sure to fill out that survey too. We would love your participation in it. It takes less than 5 minutes. The link is in the episode description for every episode this week, as well as on our Twitter page and on our Facebook. So go ahead and fill that out, share it with your friends. We'd love to get your thoughts on the Bulls season that was. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com